Welcome back to Relatively Football, a women's football podcast hosted by me, Theo Lloyd-Hughes, and I am here with my sister and co-host, Flo, from London. How's it going, Flo?
I'm all right. How are you?
I can't complain. You know, we're just about on the other side of a quite chaotic few weeks. So, feeling a little bit calmer and more normal. And another fantastic weekend of football. One of my favourite games probably of the season thus far. And we'll kick things off by going straight there to Manchester, where Manchester United beat Arsenal 1-0 thanks to a fairly late Ella Toon goal. Quite a game flow. We're recording, just so you know, listener, on Sunday evening. So the games are not too long ago, did they finish?
Yeah, we're going to hopefully try and do more recordings sort of straight after the final whistle, if you like. If I'm not working, if Theo's not working. Because I think it's quite good to sort of give your instant reaction to things rather than perhaps looking on Twitter, seeing what other people think, or
demanding a change in result legally.
Demanding a recount. Because I think I do get quite influenced by Twitter especially, and I can become a bit of a parrot sometimes and just read a really interesting take or opinion. I think, yeah, you're so right. You're so right. I think this was my favourite game of the weekend. I thought,
yeah, I couldn't agree more.
The energy and the intensity is as good as we were expecting. We both thought this was going to be a really good game. We both thought that Man U were going to win. I think you predicted the exact score, did you? Was that right?
I did. Humble brag.
Claps for you. And I think it delivered. I think, obviously, on paper, many people might say only 1-0 probably wasn't that great a game. But I just thought it ebbed and flowed a lot. And there was one point where I did think Man U dominated so much of the first half. The first 30 minutes or so was just all United. When Arsenal held out and about 55, 60 minutes in the second half, I did think, when Arsenal got back into it a little bit, I did think, you know what, Arsenal might nick this. And it'll be so gutting for United if that happens. And I didn't. And United was so organised. They held strong. They kept working. I think Heath looked a little bit frustrated because she couldn't create a goal in the end.
Couple of good chances today. She came pretty close. Yeah. But yeah.
And they got their first win against the so-called big three in the WSL, Chelsea, Arsenal and City. So it was a big moment. And I think you saw that in the celebration as well after Toon's goal. They all came together as a group. And it felt like a huge moment for them. It felt like a big stride forward for them. And they've now overtaken Arsenal, right, in the table.
Manchester United, we have a new league leader for the first time.
Here you go. So, yeah, I think it's a real watershed moment for them. And they're only going to get stronger. And their bench is so good. Their bench is so good. And when you compare that to the fact Montemurro is playing Rod and Little, who are barely fit. I was really surprised to see them come on, but he was sort of throwing the kitchen sink at the game a little bit. But I still thought it's kind of risky because in the week in their injury report, it said they were only sort of back to training. So, yeah, it's a really tough one for Arsenal. And I think this is maybe the start of not a decline, but a tough period for them after a good start to the season, perhaps, because they had a pretty kind fixture list. So maybe this is the start of a really tough run.
I mean, just finishing on Arsenal there, I think we have to maybe just dial it back a bit and say before the season, we thought they might struggle against the bigger teams. Yeah. We thought they might struggle to keep their squad together. They've played City and Chelsea in the Cup, lost both of those. They've now played Man United in the league and lost this one. Like you said, their fixtures in the league will get tougher. I think it's more of a watershed moment for Man United. For Arsenal, they've been flat track bullies before. They're looking like flat track bullies again. I would say it's about par. I don't think it's necessarily some huge negative. United had a great game plan on a battle. Jackie Gronin, Hayley Ladd, just so fantastic today. Squeezed the pitch, played much higher than I expected. Didn't let Arsenal ball control. I mean, that first half, like you said, I would argue it's as one-sided as any game we've seen this year. Almost as one, like I really mean that, like as one-sided as Chelsea versus Bristol, as one-sided as Everton versus Villa a few weeks ago. It was a demolishing. And actually, I think Montemurro and Arsenal deserve some credit for at least arresting that demolishment and not, I suppose, you know, being dominated but not conceding a goal. Like, you got to give Leo Williamson some credit for holding it down a bit. And you could see in the possession stats, Arsenal only had 2 shots, no on target at halftime. Possession stats, United had 55% to 45% in the first half. By the end of the game, it was 47-53 in Arsenal's favour. So in the second half, Arsenal probably had about 58% of the possession, if you kind of do the maths. So you can see that Arsenal were able to get their foot in the game. And that's why, like you said, relentless, intense, tenacious, lots of chances. Heath missed one, Press missed one in the first half. But I think what really impressed me is Stoney was able to kind of take a breath and say, okay, we've lost, we've kind of taken our foot off the pedal a little bit in the second half, and then was able to turn the screw again. And you saw that kind of around the 75th minute. You get Staniforth off the bench, Lauren James off the bench, Katie Zellum off the bench. And yeah, you really saw how she was able to kind of re-energize her side, put United back on the front foot. And those last 15 minutes were almost as good as, like you said, the first 15 minutes. And the goal, I mean, Sigsworth's pace to suddenly, you think her touches,
that foot race that was, I don't know how she managed to accelerate.
I feel like I heard all of Twitter type, "That's a heavy touch," and then a second later being like, "Oh no, she's managed to catch up to it."
Really impressive. But I am a little bit worried for Arsenal because they're playing Chelsea next weekend, Women's Football Weekend, and I do think we could see them slowly slip down the league as perhaps the injury issues pile up. It's good to see that there's players coming back now, but yeah, I am a little bit worried that this could be the kind of start of a poor run, because they just didn't look like they had any moment where they felt particularly comfortable. I mean, I feel like we go very up and down with Arsenal, because all you need to do is give Miedemar one chance.
That's why I'm trying to say, I would hedge your bets, because I don't think it was a totally dreadful creativity day. I think it was a good United side.
The creativity was in short supply for both Caitlin Ford and Miedemar, and I think now you notice how much Jordan Nobbs is such a core part of the team. And although I love Beth Mead, I don't think without Lisa Evans and without Jordan Nobbs, there's enough creativity there to supply Miedemar and Ford. But I think Raud coming back properly, being fit and starting again, will make a huge impact. So I expect that game next weekend to still be exciting, but I'm a little bit worried that it's going to be one-way traffic with the form that Chelsea are in.
Honor Battle was fabulous today at right back, and I think that touches a little bit on what you're saying about Beth Mead and Caitlin Ford. Like, this was a masterclass from the fullback, masterclass from the number eights, and yeah, the one-on-ones were just going so heavily in United's favour. I think Chelsea don't have as good a fullbacks, and England Leupolz actually played fantastic today.
Leupolz was so good.
But I do think, like, again, a bit like with Man City Chelsea the other day, this was like Gronin and Ladd and Zellum and Heath just showed up. And I do want to give a little bit of credit again to Stoney and like not Press and Heath to the goal itself, which was made by four players who are on the 2018 championship winning side, have been with Man United since its re-inception in 2018. Amy Turner wins the turnover, gives it to Lauren James, who plays to Sigsworth, who gets the pace and cuts it back to Ella Toon, who is patient and calm enough to slot it away. And I thought it was a really nice testament to how this team, which is now top of the table and beating one of the arguably the greatest WSL side of all time, historically, have come in the last couple of years and just surged. And Casey Stoney deserves so much credit for that. And I thought it was really cool to see some of these original players all kind of linking up and collaborating on a fantastic counter-attacking goal that I think, took everyone's breath away. But let's move on to Chelsea-Everton. We kind of touched on it. A really good day for that midfield. You hate to say it, but in a way, they look much more balanced maybe without Fran Kirby, without Sam Kerr. It's kind of one of those weird things when you see sometimes the best players removed. You see a more natural hierarchy. And obviously the big the big name who has been missing, Beth England, came back for her first start in over a month, gets 2 goals and 2 assists, and Chelsea win 4-0. Do you think we're kind of seeing a realignment that this is in fact Beth England's team and it's not really about Sam Kerr or Pernille Harder? Or do you think it's just about squad rotation and we shouldn't be making any generalisation?
Yeah, I think you have to ask the question, because Beth England has now, at this time of asking, I think before she's come in as a sub and perhaps not, you know, hit the full speed straight away, but she got the start today ahead of Sam Kerr, obviously a massive opportunity, and she grabbed it with both hands and she got 2 goals, could have had 3 or 4, deserved.
Yeah, she missed a one-on-one early on from a long Millie Bright long ball, and actually when she missed it I was thinking, oh, England looks a bit rusty, but she managed to blow off the rust pretty quick.
I think Chelsea do play in a very different way when she is leading the line. It's much more hectic, it's much more energetic, it's much more intense, and I think the press works a lot better with her because she is more aggressive than Kerr.
Well, and you saw that on the first goal, you know?
Yeah, and I think...
completely got in McIver's face.
I think Kerr brings something a bit more fluid to Chelsea. It's a bit more balletic. It's kind of football art, but it's not as aggressive as I think Emma Hayes may want her team to be in these situations where they notice a weakness. Everton were really unfortunate to lose their centre-back, Savecki. She clashed heads with England, was down, clearly concussed and had to come off. And then after she went off, it was, you know, Everton unravelled pretty quickly. So I think it would have been a very different game if she had stayed on the pitch. But Beth England is very good at smelling blood and punishing teams. And that goal, the third goal that went in, that she sort of like half pushed over the line, you know, she was so aggressive with that. She was throwing her body about and was so committed to getting the goal. And that's what she brings. And it's going to be so difficult for Emma Hayes to keep her out. I mean, in a good way, Kirby's got that ankle injury, so she doesn't need to worry about Kirby for the moment. But Sam Kerr's not going to be satisfied as coming on from a substitute and not getting a goal as well as a substitute. So yeah, you just feel like you've got to stick with Beth England now. But not starting Sam Kerr just seems a bit mad.
Yeah, and obviously we'd be remiss not to mention the exquisite finish from Pernille Harder in the 90th minute.
Yeah, a really good goal.
Absolutely wonderful goal. And yeah, Beth England with the assist kind of showed how she can play that back, you know, back to the goal, prop up, kind of assisting forward play as well, and giving her the assist and setting up the space for Harder to strike it. And yeah, it was such a complete performance from England. And I think a lot of Chelsea fans I know, writers, have been calling for Beth England to kind of be the impetus when Chelsea have looked more rusty and kind of a bit out of sorts. And I think maybe the Man City game about a month ago disrupted some of that narrative. And maybe since then it's kind of hard to, you know, we're seeing a lot of breaks in football, so it's hard to really get momentum. But I think it was you know, maybe a testament to what the future might look like. Although part of me, you know, feels like we shouldn't try and make too many generalizations, because it's a good problem to have when you have all these quality players and different games call for different schemes. And a very tired, injured Everton side today were, you know, feasted upon by a kind of ravenous Beth England, missing Lucy Graham through injury from the final last weekend, missing Valerie Govan. As you said, Flo, Savecki goes off. I think Everton, you know, right from the off, you know, G scores a goal very early on, and they kind of had their heads down, and I think they really struggled today with McGill and Sorensen kind of leading the line. They weren't able to do so much. I thought Emsley looked knackered, who's a player I really like. Christensen didn't really get her foot in. And it just, you know, sometimes it wasn't their day, and we kind of talked about it, that we thought midweek Manchester United would have an opportunity in the Conte Cup, kind of capitalising on their hangover. But I think you saw the hangover kind of energetically, spiritually, obviously away to a very good Chelsea side this weekend. Everton will slide down the table slightly after such a phenomenal start. City catch them up 2 points. 3 points. What do you think Willie Kirk's target is at this point? We've obviously given Everton a lot of praise and they deserve a lot of praise, but now you know, fifth, fourth place? What are they trying to hold on to?
I would say fourth would be the minimum now.
I think that's finishing ahead of Man City or Man United.
Well,
or Arsenal.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those three. But I don't think he'll want them to slip too far down. I think they can still get that because I do think with the situation at Arsenal, I think Everton have a really good chance at finishing fourth. So I think that will be his aim, is to not slip too far down past the big three, if you like. And if he just gets one good result against the big three, then, you know, he'll probably be okay because he just got to basically beat one of them and overtake that record with them against each other. So I think it's doable. It'll be disappointing if they end up finishing fifth after such a impressive start after a cup final. But, it you know, that those top three are just so tight and so good.
On the subject of beating one of them, Aston Villa are off the bottom, getting their first win of the season, their first ever points in the WSL, Gemma Davies' first win in the top division. They beat Brighton in Brighton or at the Crawley Stadium, 2-0. This one sort of surprised me, but I watched the whole 90 minutes, and if you watched it, it was almost one-way traffic. Did you see this as being a surprise result, Flo?
Yeah, I think we've both been really impressed with Brighton this season, and you know, Everton, I didn't watch the whole game, but I sort of dropped in and out of it on my multi-screen setup, watched Anita Asante's fantastic goal. Great to see her playing well again after all the injury issues she had.
She was fantastic today. Yeah, slightly different role than I've seen her in, but
I think it's going to bring Villa a lot of confidence because Brighton have done well at the start of this season and Villa have really struggled on and off the pitch with the situation with players testing positive for COVID and having to cancel games and then, you know, loads of mistakes, loads of defensive errors to punish themselves in games and make life harder for themselves. And this was really positive. They were really organised and really strong. Perhaps you could say they benefited off a really poor Brighton performance. You know, they're going to face Brighton again and it'll be a lot harder and they're not going to get so lucky with other teams, and I think Villa need to, you know, not, I guess, get carried away, which I don't think they will do, but it hopefully will give them confidence and they'll be able to build on this. But they do still seem quite weak. That's the only thing. I think they've sort of lucked out a little bit with the Brighton that turned up today. And yeah, Hope Powell will be absolutely fuming about that. And I don't think, you know, she will want, you know, she won't expect Brighton to play that badly again. And I don't think Villa will be that lucky again either.
Yeah, for me, it's like, I don't think Villa were lucky, but I do think Brighton was so poor today. And Hope Powell was actually missing through COVID. She's on a two-week isolation, same as Karen Hills at Tottenham. So maybe we can look into that. You know, Brighton cancelled their game midweek because of COVID. Hope Powell is now, can't come to games. She did a phone press conference after the game and said, I watched the game from home and it's been a long, difficult week for us. I think we saw that today. We looked tired and just didn't do enough to break them down. I mean, I think not doing enough to break them down is really simplifying it from Hope Powell there. I think behind the scenes, albeit maybe just asking the players to hop on a Zoom call and get shouted at, she'll be furious because Brighton have been really organized and they weren't that today. And
I guess maybe it seems like she's letting them off the hook a bit though. She's saying it's been a complicated and stressful week in more ways than one, so we've sort of just got to forget about it and move on, right? Because it is really difficult. You can't worry about these things for too long because you've just got to move on, and I think they don't want to dwell on it, really, do they?
Yeah, no, I think that's the mature way to see it. But the way I saw it is there just wasn't a captain in the Brighton team. No one really took responsibility and the ball retention was really, really poor. I think I've said before, especially in the Everton game where they came back from a deficit and even in the Man City game where they kept it 0-0, Brighton's ball retention is what maybe separates them from a team like Birmingham City. These are organised defensive teams, but Brighton are really good at keeping the ball and they kept the ball so poorly today. And we talked in the week about would Villa go for it or would they be defensive and be cautious. Villa were really cautious. They did not attack this game at first. Yeah. Anita Asante was playing at centre defensive midfield, almost as a fifth defender. They didn't play Diana Silva. They played Shaina Hales up front, who was kind of just doing a lot of running and really tracking back. It was a 4-1-4-1. And Villa were taking no risks. And in the first 30 minutes, all Brighton did was just knock it from side to side, and no one could really create an attack. And then Villa just grew in confidence. And Steen Larsen was fantastic, hit the post twice. And in a way, the actual scoreline kind of flattered Brighton in the end. Emily Stimpkins has a shot right at the death that was a really good effort that Vice score nearly goes in, and Vice saves really, really well. And then Vice actually, for Petzelberger's second goal, for Villa's second goal, does this huge goal kick, and then she just gets this beautiful first time chip on it. So Villa were a little bit lucky right at the end to get that goal, but Brighton just didn't show up. And Lee in particular was really poor, who's been such a good hold-up player. Jarrett came off the bench and added a little something, but I would just be worried that, for me, Denise O'Sullivan comes at this game with a little bit of credit. I really liked Danique Kirkdyke at the back, but she was so poor on the ball today. And I was just begging someone in the Brighton side to show a bit of creativity, because Villa did not push the boat out, and they were able to grow into the game and get confidence. And I think we haven't really seen that from Brighton. Yeah, like I said, I think Hope Powell behind the scenes will maybe be questioning, like, who is going to take a lead, who's going to grab the game by the scuff of the neck, because it was really one-way traffic in the second half. The first 30 minutes, I thought Brighton did all right, but mostly they were just probing, and then I felt like Villa sort of checked in and were like, oh, this team can't attack. We'll have a go. I was just really disappointed with Brighton, but I definitely want to give Villa some credit. I don't think they were lucky, but I think they realised there was a bad team in blue and white. The funniest thing about, you mentioned the multiple streams, I was watching three games at once, and it was a bit of a claret and blue and white deja vu. On one screen, I had Aston Villa, Brighton, and then on the other screen, I had the exact same kits, Birmingham City versus West Ham. Yeah, this one was kind of gutting for Birmingham, and a bit of mixed fortunes for West Ham, because you talk about lucky. I thought West Ham got really lucky in this game, but a bit like Villa, maybe once the luck goes your way, you have to take it with both hands. And Birmingham started really well. A classic Birmingham goal. Molly Green, so much credit for... it's actually like a counter-attack. West Ham put the ball in. Molly Green wins it back, and she takes one look up and just says, yeah, that's where I want to put it. And she does this incredible delayed kind of lofted through ball that just sweeps over the West Ham centre back, and then Claudia Walker, cool as you like, slots it away. And so impressed with Birmingham, as always. You know, you give Claudia Walker a glimpse of goal, but then Sarah Maiden goes off injured in the 35th minute, and they kind of really struggle to get creative after that. And Carla Ward has built this team to be organized and hard to beat, and when you give away a goal like that first goal, it's a Rachel Deli free kick, and she just plays it across. They're kind of all set up to defend this free kick, but then she lays it off to Leon, who then curls it in, and Claudia Walker puts it into her own net. And I mean, have you seen the header flow?
Yeah, the unfortunate diving header.
Yeah,
exceptional diving header though.
It's heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking.
She did well. And she really kind of went for it. She committed herself.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
that.
Like I joked on Twitter, she's efficient. You know, you give her a chance and she'll put it in the back of the net.
Yep.
But yeah, it felt like after that went in, Birmingham basically were just trying to hold on to the point. Yeah, they hit the post early on, but then Maiden goes off injured, and it kind of, they just ran out of gas a little bit. And West Ham weren't that great. They looked really low in ideas. Rachel Deli was moved to right back, which, you know, is a kind of a Gemma Bonner-esque pass. Like that's a, I'm a ball to a red, a red flag when I see
red
Rachel
Bonner.
Deli right back. Yeah, so Rachel Daly was at right back, which much to my chagrin. But, you know, there she is popping up, going down the right-hand side, crossing the ball in beautifully to Emily Van Egmond.
We
want to
see her on the score sheet, though. We want to see her on the score sheet.
I mean, an assist is the next best thing, and I guess she had a key pass in the opener. But I do
Matt Beard, what are you? Phil Neville? Come on, mate.
Matt Beard will be top of the world right now. Two wins in a week. West Ham have surged to ninth in the league. You know, this is huge for Matt Beard, but it was another sign of like, does this guy know his best team? Like, you know, Lehmann's getting the picked above. Lehmann and Leon are getting picked above Daly in the front line. Martha Thomas looked really well handled by Holloway and Causey today. Didn't really cause too many problems. And it was all a little long ball. There wasn't much movement. West Ham had a lot of possession. Birmingham just said, here's the ball, and they didn't do anything with it.
Yeah, I think West Ham really got away with it, to be honest. I couldn't really watch much of the second half, so I don't know if things changed dramatically. But when I watched the first half, Birmingham looked much more confident. There was much more rhythm to the way that they were playing. West Ham were very messy. That you didn't seem like there was much strategy or tactics going on in the way that they were playing. It was sort of just like, let's see what happens. And I think you do see that with all the chopping and changing that Matt Beard's doing, like you mentioned. And I found it really interesting as well to hear some of his instructions, because there is this sense of panic you hear when West Ham go a goal down, especially in Matt Beard and his coaching staff. Real sense of panic in their voice. I mean, like, I've never heard anything like it. It's just like they know what's coming. And it's quite worrying, because even though today they did turn it around, it's almost like here we go again sort of feeling. You know, how are we going to dig our way out of this one? And we saw pockets of that in the documentary last year. There's very little belief in that team and very, very little belief in those players. And it's hard to see when that's going to change. And I don't know if it's a Matt Beard thing. I don't know if it's, you know, experienced players in the team, if it's a Gilly Flackerty thing, if it's a Ken Zidane thing, if it's an Alicia Lehmann thing, or other players who've been around that squad for a couple of years now. I don't know what it is, but there does seem to be some negative energy just surrounding the vibes there. And it is a little bit worrying. And they got away with it today. They got the 3 points, which is great. But long term, little bit worrying, I think, about how this is going to work out, and what perhaps is there a real change, a real clear out that needs to happen, because perhaps people are just a bit too comfortable.
I couldn't agree more. I think there is a visible funk on this West Ham team when you see them play, and today more so, because often in games they're second best, but against Birmingham you get a lot of the ball. This is your chance to show off what you've practiced. And what they've practiced is Rachel Daly and Emily Van Egmen, who are loanees from the NWSL, are taking the game by the scruff of the neck. Rachel Daly was fantastic today. It was very Lucy Bronze-esque. She was playing right back, but she was everywhere, and she wanted to run with it. And you could see, to some extent, she doesn't really trust the other players to get it done. And I think those two players will be gone next year. And I don't know exactly how West Ham are going to respond, because it feels like they got bailed out today by a little bit of luck and some quality in moments from some players who are only on their part time. And yeah, I really like West Ham, I really like Matt Beard, I really like Grace Fisk, but a lot of these players are just not clicking right now, and you're seeing.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure what he's trying to do. I don't know what he's trying to do. Today he kept saying, you know, play our way, play our style of football, you know, don't get drawn in, concentrate, focus, let's play our game. But I don't know what their game is, because he keeps moving players around. I truly don't know what their style is. It's kind of hopeful at the moment. There's no character, no style of play.
When you talk
team.
About confidence. Kvam, who I really like as a fullback, plays for Norway, was on the bench today, has obviously been starting for West Ham, and they're on the bench and you move Rachel Daly to right back. Like, I just feel like that's another statement of sort of like, do I trust you to do it? You know, great result for West Ham. We want to show you some love. We love you, West Ham. Sometimes
We love you, Rachel Daly. We love you,
Adrian
Leon.
Sometimes we have some feelings, Lehmann. And we wanna see you improve because, you know, you're better than this. You're better than ninth. Moving on, we're going to jump back to the Saturday matches. Flo, I love the way you put it. There was a big announcement on Saturday night in the US that someone, after a long, long wait, we've waited so long, could finally take their role at the top of a team. And that was Alex Morgan finally coming off the bench for Tottenham Hotspur in what is their first point since the opening day of the season, a 1-1 with Reading. How did you have feels about Morgan's debut and a solid point for the Lily Whites.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't even get to watch any of her performance because I had to leave the house to get to cover to go cover Chelsea Men. So I didn't catch any of the second half. But what I will say is, very happy for Ash Neville to get that equaliser. Hasn't been a fantastic season for her so far.
No, she was culpable in Reading's goal as well.
She's been at fault for a lot this season.
She doesn't track back quick enough. It was almost identical to the Christensen's goal against Spurs v Everton. Neville gets caught high up the pitch, and then you got to give Jess Fishlock credit for picking the pass out. But there's that space at right back, and Reading just
It was a really good pass from Jess Fishlock. But yeah, I felt for Neville because she needed that confidence boost. But I will let you talk about your new powerful leader, Alex Morgan, and what she's going to be doing for the country now she's played her first bit of football. And I mean, I didn't really get to watch any of it. So what did she look like? Did she look comfortable? Did she look uncomfortable? What was it like?
She only played 20 minutes, the Commander-in-Chief, Alex Morgan. And I wouldn't say there's much to go on.
President.
She looked understandably hungry, excited, happy to put a foot in. She didn't shy away from anything. I think she looked a little lacking in pace, but not lacking in awareness. I think sometimes with players, you often worry about their quote-unquote match fitness. And I think she looked like she's really been engrossed in the game and studied the game. You know, it's been over 400 days or something since she last played a competitive match. She has a seven-month-old, as is well documented. So, you know, this was a hugely impressive, seamless 20-minute cameo. But she's also playing in a Tottenham Hotspur side that are finding themselves at the bottom of a lot of rankings in this league in regards to creativity, passing, chance creation. So we didn't really get to see a lot of Alex Morgan as an attacking force, but she definitely looked great and was running around. And man, do Spurs need her right now.
And hopefully, you know, this is onwards and upwards. Big weekend next weekend, Women's Football Weekend. Sadly, no fans, but lots of people will be watching because they're staggered kickoffs. Woohoo! Ooh. So, I think it's good to see her finally in the shirt, and that whole kind of agonising build-up is over now, and hopefully people will stop talking about it a little bit, although I think they already sort of have because they waited so long. I think people sort of gave up. But hopefully she can quietly, as quiet as she can be, go about her business.
Yeah, and I think that...
But we stand.
The team is perfectly... I got a lot more love for Morgan after this week, politically in the US. She's been standing Biden and Harris while her mum is off, demanding that all votes don't be counted. So Morgan's definitely on the right side of history. But I think the team is perfectly set up for her to step in. Rhianna Dean started again. Rosella Ayane started again. Dean especially just looked really absent. Didn't really have much of an effect on the game. Amaral said after the game about Morgan, I want to have her on my team forever. At the moment, she is our player, and hopefully she stays with us for a very, very long time. Slightly hopeful, but I think it's a sign that not only hopefully is she loving being in London, but obviously Amaros, Karen Hills, all the players are really loving working with her. And I think hopefully...
Got a little fun fact. Alex Morgan's neighbour is Juan Amaros. They live next door to each other.
So you think he's sort of lending her as much sugar as she needs and making sure that she feels very comfortable in London?
Well, I tell you what, I think it means she has a very nice house. But that is what you would imagine for someone of her standing. But a little fun fact for you.
Yeah, I think this team, what Spurs did well on the weekend was they got a little bit more width in open play. I'm becoming a bit of a broken record, but Siri Vorm is brilliant. Stop everything you're doing and go and watch Siri Vorm. She's obviously been a bit of a set piece mistress. Another goal, by the way, kind of partially set up by Siri Vorm this weekend. Spurs have four goals on the season. Every goal has come from a Siri Vorm corner. She was much better from open play today. Ashley Neville, culpable for the goal, but actually was much better at surging forward today. And I think you're seeing Spurs are getting their width from their fullbacks a little bit more. Whether or not that's what they want to do, when you have players like Angela Addison and Rosella Ayane, Rachel Williams, Lucia Leon, you're trying to... I feel like they've been trying to play with some of these players, but they're not really getting it done. So I think you saw the fullbacks And against a team like Reading, you saw Amoros roll the dice a little bit on the weekend. I think we've seen Spurs be quite cautious, and they kind of tried to go for it, but they're not creating enough chances, and they're definitely not taking the few chances they create. So I think Morgan is perfectly set up to come and have an influence. It's kind of whether or not the players around her can step up. I think this was definitely, we've seen Spurs be pretty cautious, and they weren't that cautious. And in respect, Josie Green and Kennedy didn't have very good games. I think they got a bit, actually, this is the first time I've really seen Alana Kennedy get bullied. And I want to give a bit of credit.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, actually. It's the first game where she did look quite weak, and she's been really strong so far. And maybe her playing in that more advanced role is better than she was dropping back a bit more on Saturday. It didn't quite work as well.
No, totally agree. And I think Dan Carter deserves a lot of credit for that. And Chaplin. Chaplin and Carter, you know, I think Spurs, we've said, have been kind of like cautious and slow and meandering and kind of bleeding the game dry until they can get something. And I think Reading were up at them and did a really good job, Dan Carter and Chaplin in particular, at being physical. And I think when you're physical with Spurs, that's kind of what Spurs offer, because they don't really have that much pace in the side. And so I thought Dan Carter deserved a lot of credit. You know, didn't get on the score sheet, but had missed a penalty midweek, and I think really kind of made amends with a very good all-round performance leading the line. And Chaplin rose brilliantly for a goal, and just looks really won the 50-50s. I think Spurs were, they get another kind of more brownie points for trying a bit more in this game, but it didn't necessarily come off. Like, Spurs still look like they're lacking in quality, and you know, they're now second bottom in the table. Like, you kind of look at the table and you're thinking Villa got their win, West Ham got their win, Spurs are a real outlier, and they've had a tough fixture list. But you, I don't know, if Morgan's going to come in and get things going, now is the time. Farrah Williams was on the warm-up show, Flo. One last thing I want to touch on Reading. And she said third place is our target. She's kind of said that outright on the wonderful warm-up show with the Kometa twins. Do you think this is realistic?
I think most... We put Reading down for fourth, I think, didn't we, really? We thought that they might be able to push on.
Yeah, they were fifth last year.
I think third is pretty ambitious now that we see what Everton and United are doing this season, and also the fact that sort of Press and Heath have arrived and Rousseau have arrived since we were having those discussions about where Reading might finish. I don't see Reading be able to compete with United or Everton, really, to be honest. But I think they could nick sixth, which is decent for them considering the budget that they're playing with. I think they've added to their squad well. I just think they can be a bit all over the place at times. But I think they're building. I think the results against Spurs, albeit not a great team, but they showed a lot of good organisation, and the same against City. They're two important results for them because they had conceded a fair amount of goals up until that point. So I think this is a good sort of building block.
Which brings us over to the last game of the weekend, a slightly controversial result, although not necessarily an outcome that was surprising. Manchester City won 8-1 at home to Bristol City. Now, Flo, walk us through what went down with the announcements just before kickoff on this one.
Yeah, it was pretty harsh, to be honest, and I really do feel for Bristol City because they're already one of the favourites, or if not the favourite, for relegation, and then this happens. Bristol City put out a tweet saying that five players weren't allowed to travel because they were following Public Health England protocols and isolating as a result of one player developing symptoms and four other players sharing a house with them, and therefore they had to call in people who weren't in the matchday squad, academy players, people who definitely wouldn't have been in their plans. And it was even more of an issue because they'd only played on Thursday night. So the fact that they were even playing Thursday to Saturday is ridiculous. That scheduling for a start shouldn't have happened. And I think they said four of the players that were isolating were one of the... and that Crystal Palace game on Thursday were part of the squad in that game. And they'd said to them, we don't feel like it's safe for them to play two games back to back in 2 days. Anyway, the FA said, sorry, we're not going to call off the game. And Bristol City had to play, and you know, you saw what happened. Now, the way that Bristol City's season has been, they perhaps may have been thrashed 8-1 anyway. Who knows? It's not been a great year for them. But I do think that in an exceptional season with everything that's going on, the FA should have made an exception. Fixture congestion is going to be what it's going to be because we've already had games called off because of COVID. The FA Cup is now paused for a month. So, you know, the fixture schedule's out the window already. So, you know, we might as well just press pause on this one. And it was just really unfair. I mean, when you look at the budget of the two teams and what City are up against already with their best 11 on the pitch, up against what City have to play with, it's, you know, David and Goliath, really. It's ridiculous. And then with everything they've had to deal with, it just seemed really unnecessary to force that through. And I think it also just points to the wider issue we have, which is the fact this week the FA said that girls' academies weren't allowed to play. Now, that means clubs either have to pull up players from their academy into the first team, which is what Casey Stoney's done at United, because otherwise they're not going to be able to train. So that's super talented, you know, future England players probably that are having to pause training and playing for at least a month. And, you know, Bristol City potentially with the same issue when they have players that they're pulling in now.
They had three teenagers, Naomi Lazel, 16, Ellen Jones, 17, and Georgia Wilson, 18, who all came in and were making either league debuts or otherwise.
And then you've got players sharing housing, which is really common in women's football, especially at clubs like Bristol. Five players sharing housing together. I mean, nowhere would you see that in men's football. You wouldn't even probably see that in the National League, to be honest. It's ridiculous. And it just shows yet another way that women's sport is being punished during this pandemic. And that's also why I think they should have made an exception, because this is exceptional. It, you know, no, very few other sports, especially football, yeah, and some Olympic sports, you might find GB squads sharing housing. Sports like hockey, you often see that. But to have players all sharing housing during a pandemic, this is very likely to happen. So you need to have something in place to, you know, make sure teams aren't going to be punished. They're being punished as a result of following the rules, because we don't even know if any of the players even have COVID. But they're being safe because we're living in a global pandemic where people are dying of a virus, and it's better to be safe than sorry. And Bristol are being punished for that, and I just don't think that's fair, because Tanya Oxtoby's been put in such a difficult position and she's rightly fuming. And I think, you know, it'll be really unfair if the 7 goal difference from this game is what sends Bristol City down. I don't think it will be, because I think that the damage has already been done for them. You know, their goal difference is pretty terrible already up to this point and they're struggling. But, you know, who knows? It could. And because Villa look like they're going to be struggling this season. So what if it does come down to goal difference? I just think it was really unfair.
No, I couldn't agree more. And you're right. The timing with the Academy news, you know, this week makes it even more kind of spit in your face about these differences, the gender equality, the way the league is going to be affected by the pandemic, and how that is not the same as the men, and that is not right. And they're trying to do what's best for the safety of other players and other teams and the league. Bristol City have the youngest average age of any, you know, Ebony Salmon, who scored the goals, only 19. They have the youngest age of any team in the league, 22.4. And after they made the subs, Ellen Jones and Georgia Wilson came on. That went down to 21.9. So we're talking about a really young team built on academy players. And all those, the source of a lot of these players has now been removed from Bristol. And, you know, that's just not right, especially when they're doing that in the name of safety. Flo, the FA had an injustice on, arguably, on letting Bristol play this game. But was Gemma Bonner getting robbed at the back by Ebony Salmon arguably an even bigger injustice for the Free Bonner movement?
You know what? Hats off to Ebony Salmon. I really like, I think she's a fantastic player, really exciting young player to keep an eye on for the future. She had a really good season last season. I think she scored in pretty much every game that she featured in. So it was good to see her, you know, part of the action.
Even at the cost of Bonner's soul.
No, the justice for Gemma campaign, we move on, and we will still be gathering and organizing. So, you know, we've got to keep this momentum going. Don't you worry about that. Just because Gemma makes one mistake, it doesn't mean the fight is over.
A couple of other things, more positive things I want to touch on in this game was hashtag clinical Man City. 10 shots on goal, and 7 of those went in. Obviously, one of them was a own goal. That is much better for arguably the most profligate team in the league. And then kind of attached to that, Ellen White became only the second player to reach 50 WSL goals. You got to give her some credit. But she's been really struggling. And she had 2 goals and a very good Beth England-esque backs to the goal assist in this one for a lovely finish from Kira Walsh. Do go and watch that, outside of the boot. Proper techers. Do you think, I mean, obviously this will give Ellen White some confidence, but coming into this game, she had 1 goal in 5 matches. She hasn't looked great. She really struggled in the FA Cup final. How do you think, you know, where is she in regards to this season / the Lionesses, kind of, you know, where is she on her own course of, you know, in 2020, 2021, where does she want to be, and where do you see her on that trajectory?
It's a funny one, because after the World Cup, she was so popular, such a household name, and the move to City was rightly justified. But then since then, City have kind of gone in a different direction, sort of. It just feels like they don't really need a striker like White. She's the sort of player who will contribute when City are already 3-0 up. You know, it doesn't seem like this season especially she's going to be a match winner for them. So,
well, I can tell you that they were already 5-1 up before she started scoring on the weekend.
Well, exactly. I feel like she should go. I wouldn't say going to a club like Birmingham again, because I think she is, you know, it is a step higher than that. But Birmingham, she was a match winner constantly. I remember that winner she scored against Chelsea at King's Meadow to win 3-2. Such a legendary game, such a fantastic goal. She needs to be that person in the team. And I think a move maybe to an Everton or someone like that would be really good for her, because I don't think she's quite part of what City want anymore, or what she needs from a team as well, because she's, you know, now getting into the latter stages of her career. And I also think if England are going to win the Euros, they need Ellen White to be, you know, big, to be in her peak, and it would be good for her to be going into that tournament off the back of scoring loads of goals. But we're still 2 years away from that now, because the tournament's been delayed, so who knows? You know, she'll be 33 by then. Who knows what the situation will be?
And just finishing up on some Man City positives, Lucy Bronze put in an absolutely world-class performance. I'm sure,
yeah, she was exceptional.
That first goal is probably the best solo goal of the season thus far. She picks up the ball on about her own 30-yard line, and then dribbles the entire pitch and dinks it in, kisses the post, back of the net. Obviously, it's on a counter-attack. She only has to beat about 3 Bristol players, but unbelievable dribbling. And for Ellen White's first goal as well, she gets the assist and is just beautiful down that right-hand side. So even against weakened opposition, just fantastic to see Bronze in her element back in English domestic football. All right, we're going to take a little quick break. Now we've rounded up the weekend, and we're going to talk about some other stuff that happened and some WSL Championship, or WW Championship, whatever you like to call it.
Whatever you want to call it.
We'll see you in a bit. All right. Welcome back to Relatively Football. We are going to just dip into the extremely competitive and riveting FA Women's Championship, where at the top of the table, it just keeps getting even more spicy. Flo, what are we looking at?
Yeah, another dramatic weekend, shall we say, in the Women's Championship. Liverpool beat Sheffield United 1-0. A really, really good goal from Rizola Babajide. They showed it on the Women's Football Show.
Yes, Women's Football Show.
You'll be able to watch the the goal and on FA Player and watch the highlights as always. So definitely check that out. But yeah, a really, really, really good goal. I wonder, you know, hopefully if she'll get another call up to England soon, because she's had a really good couple of weeks. But despite that win for Liverpool, it is Durham that hold on to the top spot. They had a draw, couldn't quite beat Charlton, which is a good result for Charlton. Lewis lost, unfortunately, for Lewis. They lost, I think that was 1-0 that game. 1-0 to Leicester. The rest of that top section, you now have Durham on 15 points. So Durham still at the top. Sheffield United, 14 points, very close. All these top five have all played seven as well, which is good, because they're now, there was a bit of a sort of mismatch in terms of games played. But you've got Durham at the top with 15, Sheffield United with 14 points, Liverpool with 14 points, Leicester with 14 points, and Lewis a bit further back on 11 points. So that is so tight now. Three teams all on 14 points. There's only one promotion spot available. Durham top by 1 point. Durham not attached to a men's club, so whether or not they'd get the license, who knows? But having such a good start to the season, had a big win in the Conti Cup as well over Sheffield United midweek. It's just getting so exciting in the Championship. And next Sunday, you bet it, Sheffield United are playing Durham. It's going to be a big one. 2 p.m. kickoff. I have no idea if it's being streamed on the FA Player, but I bloody hope it is, because that is a tantalising top of the table clash. The drama just doesn't stop in the bloody Championship.
One more thing I wanted to touch on in the world of European women's football is Göteborgi. The Swedish side have won the Swedish league ahead of Rosenborg. Emily Sonnet, women's American national team player, has been on loan over there. So she's put a nice title in her trophy cabinet alongside a World Cup. That was really exciting kind of thing that finished off this weekend. Scandinavian leagues are kind of finishing up. I guess they close for the winter, so it's slightly different schedule. It's going to be interesting to see. There's actually a Finnish player on who she plays with, who's just been signed by the Portland Thorns as well. So we're starting to see some of the European football come to an end. Some of these, the kind of tectonic shifts we all saw move around in August, September, are kind of starting to realign. And as we get to the winter and into the new year, things will look a little bit different come these new team setups. And on that note, we have the NWSL expansion draft on Thursday. So should we try and get an episode up on Friday, Flo, touching on that and then previewing the games on the weekend?
Yeah, let's.
On that note, do follow us on Twitter at RelativelyFoot, Instagram RelativelyFootball, RelativelyFootball@gmail.com if you just want to write us a nice love letter. It's been so sweet hearing so many nice things and getting lots of messages here and there. So yeah, really appreciate all you lovely listeners, and tell people about it, eh, Flo? You know, a couple of siblings just want to shout. We shout out a lot of people. Sometimes we want people to shout us out.
Yeah. Tell all your friends. And also, we have another siblings and your enemies too. We have another sibling special coming up in 10 days, shall we say?
Yeah. 10-ish days. After the next WSL break. Just you wait.
Yeah. It's going to be big.
It's going to be big. Well, look, Flo, thanks so much for hanging out. Always good to see you. I've seen you quite a bit today. Spoilers.
Double feature.
It's been a double recording kind of day. And enjoy your Sunday evening. Get some sleep. Please wear a mask, and good luck in lockdown too. I'm being safe over here, I promise.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you very much. do.